even regarding the earth as earth and the sky as sky isn't quite correct. We perceive them, we regard them in one way, but they don't really work exactly how we perceive them. They don't turn out as we perceive them. And so this is a lot of dukkha for us. We're always taking things to be a certain way, and they're never that way. And so this is a real problem for us. Sanya is very broad. We're perceiving things constantly, but almost never as they really are. But no matter how much dukkha sanya is, it's something we just have to have. Sanya is something we can't do without. But sanya is necessary for our lives. To perceive as Mr. A, Mrs. B, Mr. C, Mrs. D, or to perceive this is Suan Mok, or perceive things as America, Australia, England, and so on. All these kind of perceiving things in these ways, all this sanya, is necessary. But none of it is really true. None of it will happen the way we have perceived it. So we must understand them in this way, to see how how sanya can bite us, how it deceives us and tricks us, and how that can bite us in claws, and how that is an enemy, how frightening all these perceptions are. A very simple example of the problem of sanya, the difficulties with sanya, is with our memories. We try very hard to remember things. We try to store up and protect our memories. But then so often when we need to remember something, we can't. We try to remember, and we just can't remember. This is how undependable sanya can be, what a hassle it can be. It's not the way we want it to be. We want to remember, and we can't. This is a very simple example of the dukkha of sanya. But sanya is really much more than memory. In fact, the essence of sanya is not really memory. Memory is more of a result. We remember the things that we have regarded. First, there must be this discrimination and regarding of something as this or as that, as man, woman, tall, short, good, bad, whatever. Once we've discriminated and regarded it in this certain way, then we store that as memory. But the real important thing to see is this discriminating regarding. It's a kind of labeling. That's the essence of sanya, and we can never really depend on it. Things are never the way we regard them. And so there is always a kind of frustrating, undependable dukkha to it all. The biggest, most enormous kind of sanya, as well as the lowest, most foul and despicable sanya, is that of atta sanya, perception of self, or regarding things as self. Atta means self. This is the biggest problem, this is the whole problem of sanya. That we are always taking things to be self. We're perceiving things as selves, as separate entities, and then regarding them accordingly. We actually believe that I'm a self, this is a self, that's a self. All these selves all over the place. And then this becomes the foundation for all the rest of sanya. Descartes came up with the line, cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. But there was nothing really original about this. Much earlier, when mankind began to perceive things as self, then just to think that I exist just because I think is to regard the thinking as self. So Descartes was just putting into words something that had been going on for thousands of years, this regarding things as self. This is the whole problem of sanya. This is what makes it so heavy. And this is how sanya can bite us and claw us and torment us, because we're always regarding things as self. Mind and body, this mental and material combination that makes up life. It can experience, it feels, it can think without there being any need for any self. Please don't believe Descartes that says because we think there must be an ego or a self, that I must exist. It's a very natural process that the body and mind experiences, feels, and thinks. It doesn't depend at all on any kind of ego or self. But because the way we do experience and think, and because of ignorance, we go and assume that there must be a self in there. And so we perceive things as selves. And then this bites us. This causes all kinds of troubles and hassles in life. But in fact, there's no real self or ego there, so there's no need to believe what Descartes says. We shouldn't assume that just because we think there must be a self. We should look at thought and see how it really works before making assumptions. And so this is the third of the aggregates that we cling to, the third kind of natural function that we turn into an enemy because of our own misunderstanding, especially this misunderstanding of self, that things are ourselves. The fourth aggregate of life is called sankhara, in Thai sankhan, in Pali sankhara. Sankhara, as the fourth aggregate, specifically emphasizes thinking or thought. And then we call it sankhara khanda. But the word sankhara has a very broad meaning. Sankhara means conditioning. But there are these three aspects to it. There's the one who conditions, the conditioner, the causal aspect of conditioning. Then there's the thing that is conditioned, the condition, the effect aspect of conditioning. And then there's the process of conditioning, the conditioning itself. So these three aspects, interrelated, interconnected aspects of sankhara, the conditioner, the conditioned, or the conditioned thing, and then the conditioning, the process. Now all three of these, whenever there is a living body, and there is feeling, and there is perception, this conditioning will be going on all the time. But what is the real, the most important analysis for us is that when this conditioning is happening, it's constantly conditioning thought, all kinds of thoughts and ideas. So sankhara has a very broad meaning. It applies everywhere. But here we're using it in a more limited sense, sankhara khanda, that whenever there's life and feeling and perception, then there will be this conditioning of the mind, this stirring up, this concocting of the mind, which is essentially the conditioning of thought, of thinking. And then once this thinking takes place, we go and regard it as being self, as being I. We think about things in terms of I. We think that I exist. And so this is the fourth enemy, the fourth thing that bites us. It's quite pathetic in a way that in Thailand and maybe other countries as well, the word sankhara is only understood as meaning the body. For many Thais, if they say the word sankhan, they just mean the body. This isn't completely wrong, but it's not very correct either. It's just a little bit correct. Sankhara, in the broadest sense, includes the body, but there's much more to it than that. And to think that sankhara is just the body is to miss the most important aspect of it. Sankhara we can understand it in terms of the things being stirred up, or the creation and then the dissolution of things. This is sankhara, things being created and then they dissolve. This arising and passing away of things is the essential process of sankhara. A word that can help us to understand this is the word conceive. Conceive we use both to conceive thoughts, but we also use it when the sperm fertilizes the egg, and then a new physical life is conceived. This sankhara can be understood as this, the starting of new things, the giving birth to new things. And so because of all this sankhara, thoughts are constantly born in the mind. And then this constant activity of sankhara keeps the mind spinning around, keeps it very busy. And that can be a lot of dukkha. Now for the ordinary Thai in the street, in the colloquial usage of the word sankhara, if we say to put out the sankhara, it means to die. This is what many people, like in English, we would say to pass away. They would say to dap sankhan, to put out the sankhara, meaning death. But this isn't what it really means. To put out or to quench, to extinguish the sankhara means to just stop all that conditioning and concocting of the mind. All that concocting is very tiresome, very troublesome. It doesn't allow the mind to have any peace. To extinguish this concocting of the mind has nothing to do with dying. We should understand it correctly. When all that sankhara, the conditioning, concocting is going on, the mind can never be at peace. But to extinguish that is very cool, very peaceful, very open and free. So the sankhara, this concocting of the mind, this is the fourth aggregate of life, which can cause us so many problems. This, when this concocting, all this sankhara is going on, then it is never peaceful. But we should understand here that when we talk about sankhara like this, we mean the sankhara that is a result of ignorance. When things are misunderstood, then there is a concocting of the mind which inevitably leads to dukkha. But when this ignorant concocting of the mind, when this sankhara ceases, then there is great peace. There is a very calm and spacious joyfulness. And so a very common saying in Thailand, De Sang Upasamo Sukho, which means the calming of the sankharas is bliss. The calming of the concocting is happiness. Whenever this concocting of the mind, this concocting through the power of ignorance, whenever this calms down, quiets down, then there is joy. If that gets stirred up again through the power of ignorance, then the joy disappears and there is dukkha. And so it is also, another phrase is sankhara parama dukkha. Parama means supreme. Concocting is the supreme torment. This constant stirring up and concocting and grinding and spinning around of the mind is the ultimate dukkha. But always understand that this concocting we're talking about comes from ignorance, from misunderstanding. If there is correct understanding, there is no sankhara. The mind is not concocted. There are just the natural processes of life taking place. And that's not what we mean by sankhara. But when, in addition to the natural life processes, which can include thought, when in addition to that, there is this stirring up, this busying, this concocting of the mind, then there is dukkha. This is the fourth aggregate. At every funeral ceremony in Thailand, at every kind of ceremony involved with funerals or memorials to people who have died, the monks always chant the line, De Sang Upasamo Sukho. Stop the concocting, and that is happiness. Stopping the concocting is happiness, is the supreme happiness. And this is repeated over and over again. The average Thai hears this hundreds of times in their life. It's being repeated all over the place. But unfortunately, it's had almost no result. People are hearing all the time, stopping the concocting is supreme happiness. But it's quite pitiful that nobody seems to hear or to listen. It's like playing a flute for rhinoceroses or playing a flute for turtles. It just never gets through. So please give adequate attention to this sankhara, this concocting of the mind. Whenever this happens, there will be dukkha. Life will not be at peace. This sankhara here is inevitably the result of ignorance. If there is correct knowledge and understanding, this sankhara, as we're using it here, will not happen. It's only the result of ignorance, of looking at life stupidly. And then this this concocting of the mind takes place. Whenever the mind is concocted by ignorance, then there occur all kinds of foolish thoughts. And so all of this becomes an enemy for me. When the mind has been concocted, then there is me exists, I exist. And then all this concocting is a problem for me. It's my enemy. So we ought to be very careful about it all. The next and final aggregate is called vijnana. In Pali, in Thai they call it vijnan. Pali, vijnana. This can be a tricky word because it's been given many different meanings. In Thai, many Thais think vijnan means spirit. And this is related to the Hindu definition of vijnana, which existed before Buddhism, which meant a soul or spirit that spun around within many births, within many reincarnations. It was, in pre-Buddhist thought, the thing that they thought would leave this body when it died and go and be born in another body, be reincarnated. That was called the vijnana. But that's not the understanding of Buddhism. That's not what vijnana means in the Buddha's teaching. In Buddhism, vijnana is the thing or the function that causes consciousness of various things. Whenever there is consciousness of something, it happens through vijnana. There are six kinds of vijnana. There's eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind, vijnana. Whenever we're conscious of anything through the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, or mind, that is through the functioning of vijnana. It's the very basic knowing or consciousness or awareness of something, of anything. Now there are, in a way, two levels to this. The first is when the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, or body receive some stimulus, and then there is consciousness of that stimulus. This is the first level of vijnana. Then mind consciousness knows the meaning of that thing. Then it's known directly in the mind. First there's the outer senses kind of consciousness. Consciousness of the senses being stimulated by this thing. And then the mind. Then there's mind consciousness. Knows the meaning of it. And this leads to the feelings towards things, the vedana, and then the perception, and all the sankhara that we've talked about. This is the fifth aggregate, and it's happening everywhere. Wherever there is consciousness of anything, there is this vijnana. In Thailand, the Hindu teachings came here first, way before Buddhism came. So when the Hindu or Brahmanistic teachings came to Thailand, they brought this idea, this teaching of a vijnana in the sense of a soul or spirit that inhabited all kinds of things, not just people, but trees and rocks and all over the place. All things had this spirit. And then when that thing died, the body died, that vijnana would go and get reincarnated. This is a Hindu teaching which existed in Thailand long before Buddhism came. And it was very firmly, deeply implanted in the Thai religious culture. And so later, when Buddhism came, everybody already had this Hindu understanding of vijnana. And so many people have been unable over the centuries to understand the Buddhist teaching of vijnana, which is must be understood in light of the central teaching of Buddhism, that of anatta, that in life there is no self, no soul, no spirit in the Hindu sense. In Buddhism, Buddhism denies that there is any such thing. So the meaning of vijnana in Buddhism is the reaction that arises when a sound, when a sight, a sound, a taste, or whatever stimulates the respective sense organ. And then there arises this consciousness. So we must discriminate between the two kinds of vijnana, the kind that was the Hindu teaching which came to Thailand first, and then the Buddhist teaching which came later. If we don't discriminate between the two, we'll be very confused. In the Buddhist scriptures, in one of the discourses of the Buddha, it's recorded how one of the monks who had been staying with the Buddha had confused this issue of vijnana. This one monk was named
Gevata Buddha,
which means son or child of Gevata, which means fisherman. His name was Sati, the fisherman's son. This monk had the opinion or the understanding that just this vijnana speaks, or just this vijnana thinks, speaks, and dies and then goes to be reborn somewhere else. He was going around saying this, that it's the vijnana that thinks, that speaks, and that goes and gets reborn somewhere. Monks heard him saying this, and they went to talk to the Buddha. They reported this to the Buddha, and the Buddha called him in for a little talk and asked him, what is your understanding of vijnana? And the monk told him. And the Buddha basically said, you've got it all wrong. In this teaching here, vijnana is something that arises right here as a reaction to stimulus of the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind. Whenever there is a sense stimulus, there arises vijnana. According to this monk, vijnana was some everlasting thing that was always there. And this is directly this is directly against what the Buddha was teaching. So these were quite strong words of the Buddha to show that this monk had been living with the Buddha and had gotten such an important point completely wrong. And so it was a bit embarrassing for that monk, and he became very depressed. And this shows that even people living with the Buddha himself had trouble and could confuse this point of vijnana. But what's very important is to see that vijnana isn't some lasting substance as it's understood in just about everywhere. This is the common human understanding. But that vijnana just arises. It's just this awareness that arises with the stimulation of the senses. This, in many religions, just about all religions, such as the Hebrew religion that existed before Christianity, or you can find it in Greek philosophy, and all over the place you find talk or teaching about the spirit, the soul. And in fact, for most of you sitting here, there is probably this kind of an understanding of some belief in a self or in a spirit or soul of some kind. Everyone is free to think as they wish, but please don't bring that idea into Buddhism. Don't apply the word spirit or soul to the word vijnana in Buddhism. Vijnana is merely the basic consciousness or awareness of sense objects that stimulate the sense organs. Now, because if we confuse this issue, it will be very, very difficult for us to ever understand religion. This whole question of vijnana and all the very many interpretations given to it make it very difficult for us to really understand spirituality. And if we don't understand vijnana correctly, then it is impossible to ever quench dukkha. We'll always be tormented by dukkha as long as we misunderstand vijnana. If we take this vijnana to be some kind of spirit, then it will be like a ghost which will keep haunting us, keep tormenting us. It's necessary, if we would like to free ourselves of dukkha, to understand, to find out what vijnana really is, how it really works. But for most of the time, it's deceiving us, it's tricking us. And we're constantly taking vijnana to be I, this quality of awareness that is with us right now. We're identifying with it for the most part as I see, I hear, I smell, I touch, I taste, I know. All this attaching to vijnana is a very deep-rooted habit, and which turns vijnana into an enemy. It makes vijnana bite us, makes us suffer. So this is why I requested earlier that you try your best to know, to understand these five khandhas. If we don't understand the five khandhas, then there's no way that we can understand Buddhism. If we haven't gotten to know the five khandhas, Buddhism will always remain a mystery to us. So it's absolutely essential that we start to understand them. Otherwise, we'll keep taking them to be self, keep taking them to be I. Sometimes we cling to these five aggregates as I, and sometimes as mine. We cling to them as self or as belonging to self. So sometimes I am the body, or sometimes it's my body. Or I am these feelings, sometimes it's my feelings. Or I am the perceptions, sometimes it's my perceptions. Like this. But whenever we regard any of these khandhas, any of these aggregates of life as I or mine, when we take them to be selves or belonging to selves, self, like this, then it bites. It bites the mind. It inflicts dukkha on the mind. So it's crucial to understand these five khandhas. If we really understand them, if we really see them as they are, we'll see that they are not self, that none of these khandhas or any combination of them or anything outside of them can be taken as I or mine. Only by knowing the khandhas thoroughly can we understand Buddhism. Until this happens, this will create endless problems for us. We'll keep grabbing onto these two various aspects of life as I or mine, and that will bite, and that turns life into our enemy. And so this is why the Buddha said, Sankhitena Bachupana Dhanakanta Dukha. This was, the Buddha said, if we speak concisely, the five aggregates that are attached to are the essence of dukkha. In short, all dukkha comes down to these five aggregates when we cling to them. So this means that the essence of dukkha is attachment, or the Pali word is upadana. Whenever there is upadana in any of these five functions of life, then there will be dukkha. He used the word the pancha, which means five, upadana khanda, the aggregates of clinging, or these aggregates that are clung to, attached to. This is the essence of all dukkha. Sankhitena bachupadana khanda dukkha. All dukkha comes down to these five khandas that are clung to. So the key word here is the word upadana. It's not so much the aggregates themselves, but this upadana. And in Buddhism, this can be a tricky word to understand. So we'll give of the best definition we can of it. Upadana is to regard something according to the power or of ignorance, or whenever we regard regarding something under the influence of ignorance, that will be attachment, that regarding things through ignorance. This is attachment. And as soon as there is this regarding things ignorantly, foolishly, stupidly, then there must be dukkha. The matter of the dukkha ariya saccha, the noble truth of dukkha, isn't finished yet, but the time is up. So we'll continue tomorrow.